We got a great episode coming up with Lee Peel, but before we get into that, just a quick reminder that you can support the show at patreon.com/thefitcast starting at just $1 per episode, or you can make a one-time donation by going to thefitcast.com and clicking on that PayPal tab on the left-hand side. Thank you to everyone that is supporting the show, and I appreciate if you check that out if you haven't already. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 310. Okay. It's episode 310.
You just have to leave that.
I will leave that just because the thing is I'm going to Japan and I'm trying to get a lot of stuff recorded ahead of time, and I kind of get unorganized when it comes to all this stuff. But you heard the other voice on the line, and that is Lee Peel of course, LeePeel.com, among many other things. But Lee, how you doing?
None other than I am doing good. Thank you for asking.
So it's been a while.
It's been too long.
It's
been so long that there are rumors. There are rumors on the internet about my well-being and where
really?
I've been. Yeah. Like one person sent me a message and they were like, I really hope that you're okay. Like, I haven't seen you around and I want to make sure you're okay. And I'm like, man, like when you're not internet-y, because I am totally living life. Mm-hmm. I'm living life. It's just not being captured on the internet. So
pops up when Katie yeah, like mentions
Katie
something.
Katie will capture some of my life on the internet, but like other than that, like I'm not a check-in person. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to check in at my location, or I'm not a picture person. Like other people take pictures of me, but I don't take pictures really, generally speaking. I'm just not a like do something and then share online kind of person. So it's really funny that I'm an online person because I'm so not internet-y in those ways. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'm good. I've been living life. I've been doing things. I'm just not been on the internet very much. There's a lot of reasons for that, but I just haven't been on the internet very much. So yeah, I'm doing very good though, as far as like real life or in person.
Well, you're living. You're actually
I'm living.
You're getting
I'm doing,
off the computer.
I am not in the cave anymore, which is probably a bad thing for my job. But like it's a good thing for like my life and happiness and all that kind
of
stuff.
Well, I mean, for the last couple of years, I mean, you were going really hard with creating content and doing books and doing
and
websites
research
and stuff
and
like
research
that.
And totally. Research and work and work and work and work. And I have taken a bit of a not sabbatical from people of like work. Like I've taken a sabbatical a little bit from getting arguments with people on Facebook and debating popular stupid articles that are out. I am not saying it's not important. And in fact, I have just recently had the ultimate revelation that I need to have. I have a few people and one of the people that asked questions, Suzanne, who I met in London, who's fantastic. She was a big part of the start of my realization of why I still want to keep my job online. Mm-hmm. But I kind of had my final revelation of why I do, yes, want to be a part of this, not just the fitness industry or being a personal trainer or helping people. I know I've wanted to do that, but to be an actual part of the industry, like a voice like online and kind of this community again, I finally kind of made up my mind about it, which I really just made up my mind about it like a couple of days ago. So it's funny that we're doing this because I really wasn't sure.
Well,
I wasn't sure. And I just made up my mind. So I finally have kind of decided, yes, I will be kind of a part of this and I will take part in this on the level that, cause I've had my foot in for like 3 years now, like kind of back and forth. I really haven't I haven't been sure. And I'm finally sure that I want to do it. So it's, yeah, a little bit of a Gloria Hallelujah moment. But yeah, I had my aha moment. I do want to be a part of the industry. I have decided. I just didn't know. I didn't know if I wanted to be. But that's what I've been living very like real life and talk people in person and things like that.
Yeah, but it is, something that we won't get into a lot, but I mean, it's, sure. I talked to Lou about this on 299, but it's just with anything, it's like talking about fitness stuff is like talking about, you know, politics now, or it's like, it's like, what do you believe? And like, what does the research show? And like all this stuff. And, you know, for me, I've always, you know, been trying to just get the information to the people out there. And like, you can decide, like, you know, I definitely have more people on the show that I find that their information is valuable and things like that. But, you know, it's just tough to get super, positive about arguments and people calling each other out on Facebook and stuff like that. Like, I always thought there's gotta be a better way to handle stuff. And, but it's, you know, maybe it's a good thing that people are arguing, and then just figure it out, argue amongst yourselves, and then tell me what's right. like I'll look at your research, but I can't do 100 comment threads on forums.
Yeah, I think it's Facebook. I think it's different for everybody. I think that I just very much struggling, and I think it'll be a continual struggle, but very much struggling to where I in particularly belong and my voice belongs, and who, in a weird way, you kind of buddy up with people, you kind of partner with people a little bit and their beliefs and their systems, in a manner of speaking. It happens inadvertently. And one of the biggest problems I had was there's a lot of people I don't like very much. Like, not, I don't mean it like they're either mean or
negative.
I don't like
people, and
I don't like their quality control or whatever. Like, and I'm sure they don't like me too, and that's fine. But dealing with the interpersonal aspect, and then the attacks, and the kind of like just constant negativity, and it was getting a bit much. So I just, anyway, but I've had a really good revelation, and I'm happy. I'm finally at peace with it, and I'm looking forward to doing a lot of things. But yeah, I've been good. I've been very good.
Selfishly, this is great for us. Like,
yes.
So
yes, it is.
Good to have you back.
Yay.
And people, if you've been listening to the show the last, you know, 10 episodes or so, you know that we've been doing a Patreon for the show to help keep the show going, just because, you know, sponsors have always been, you know, here and there. And the people that do want to sponsor the show, I don't really find that their products are worthy of your attention. So the Patreon thing, and I've been getting a lot of questions about that, just because people are kind of confused about what it's all about. But
yeah, I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah, what's up?
I wanted, because I looked at the thing, right? Yeah. And here's what I don't understand. So someone is donating to get, like, to make a payment for, like, every episode that you release. So let's say I say, I want to support Kevin, and I like sign up for it. Every time you release an episode, like I say, I want to give you $1. It'll like charge $1 to like my credit card or something like that. Like with every episode, is that how it works?
Yeah. So what happens is, I mean, you can do like any dollar amount. We've had like some people that have been like super generous that have donated like $20 per episode, and you guys are crazy and you're awesome. But right now,
that's amazing. Really? That's awesome.
Some people have been super generous. I mean, some of them are like friends of mine, like that are, you know, I know in real life and stuff like that. But we have some people that are, you know, just, you know, super generous. And like I've always said about donating in the past, like only do it if you're in the financial position to do so. But the cool thing with Patreon is that you can say, you know, I like the FitCast. I want to help support it going forward. So I'm going to give, you know, $1 for every episode that Kevin releases. And what happens through Patreon is that you get billed at the end of the month. So if I release 3 episodes in October, you'll be billed $3. Or if you want to do $5 per episode, you'd be billed $15 at the end of the month. And you can also say, all right, you know, I'm going to donate $5 per episode, but I want to cap it at $15 that month. So if I release 4 episodes, you would only be charged for 3 of them. Or you'd only be really supporting 3 of them out of those 4. So,
okay. So that's really good for someone who maybe be not you, obviously, but someone who is like kind of shadier. Yeah. And if there was like some podcast, like, well, great, now I'm going to release like a bunch of like podcasts and boom, boom, boom. Okay. So you can cap it.
Yeah. So this way, you know, I've told people, and even says like on the website, that I want to do this show weekly. And if I get the support to do it weekly, I can make sure, because this way you guys are actually literally, you know, paying me a wage to do the show, where I can look at it as like, all right, you know, we have $210 coming in for the next episode. So I can set aside the 4 hours that I need to put to you know, produce it, record it, edit, put together questions, you know, submit emails and stuff like that to get it going. And that way, in my mind, like, I can make it literally a job and almost like a business, instead of like, all right, you know, I don't know if we're going to have, you know, donations come in through PayPal this month. Like, sometimes some, you know, someone will donate like $30, but then I'll be like, all right,
there'll be like a month where it's like nothing or something.
Exactly.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah.
So this way you can basically say like, all right, you know, I think the FitCast is something that is worth keep going. I thought I got something out of those last 300, whatever episodes. So I think it is worth giving Kevin, you know, $2 per episode for your time. And like, basically it's like paying for a TV show once a week.
No, I love crowdsourcing in general and like crowdfunding and things like that. I think that that's really cool. I think that's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that is kind of the deal, and it is easy to set up, and just go to patreon.com/thefitcast. And, like I said, you guys are literally going to be deciding whether I can keep doing the show, because I was talking to Lee off the air, but now I'm like, I've launched three businesses in the last, you know, 3 years through Mike Bowles Strength and Conditioning. I also am going to be, you know, doing some traveling and stuff like that. So, to kind of make sure I can budget the time to do this and say, like, how much is my time worth? Do I want to spend 4 hours doing something else, or is it worth getting paid to do the show and to keep going and get the information delivered to people's ears every week? So, like I said, right now we got over 10,000 listeners per episode, and we got like 60 people donating or supporting through Patreon. So, what I'd say is like, if you want to just try it out, start, like, a lot of people are just doing $1, just, you know, jump on there. If we have like 100 people do $1 per episode, that would be gigantic. Like, you would really, you know, making sure I can cement this in and make sure you guys are getting a show for like the next 300 episodes. So check it out, patreon.com/thefitcast. And thank you to everyone out there that has supported the show, whether it's through Patreon or through even PayPal through thefitcast.com. There's a PayPal button on there if you just want to do it one time. You guys have really made sure that this keeps going strong after 8 years. 8 years.
That's amazing.
Wait, what?
No.
Yeah, 8 years. Holy crap. Getting old. Hey, Lee.
It's insane.
Yeah, I know. Let's talk about some fitness stuff.
Should we?
We got to.
All right, let's do it.
We also did an off topic, so if you want to hang out after the music to hear about music, you can do that. But we got a lot of great questions from the audience, and we'll get to as many as we possibly can. The first one that we'll go to is from Mark, and Mark wanted to know if you had any methods or strategies for overcoming, you know, feeling lethargic on carb restricted nutrition plans, or even just, you know, caloric restriction and things like that.
Yeah, I think my knee jerk reaction is I just have to caveat it with saying, make sure you need to be on the type of carb restriction plan that should really affect your energy levels. I rarely like people, and I think that it's not generally necessary, especially for those training. And this is general pop kind of stuff. This is not people with special conditions, et cetera. That's always just needs to be a general disclaimer. But I very rarely think that being aggressively restricted of carbohydrates when you train is necessary, nor do I think that it is a good idea. Or aggressive caloric restriction when you're training is a good idea. And since I believe in training as much as possible, just for general health and well-being, I think that training should be a part of any sort of fat loss program and just general life plan. So if we are training on some sort of level, whether deficits are being achieved or not, I'm not a huge fan of aggressive carb restriction or aggressive caloric restriction. And when I say aggressive carb restriction, I'm talking about anything below 100 grams per day, even really 150, depending upon the type of individual and how big. That is going to vary. A 5'2" female office worker is going to have different, obviously, carb needs and caloric needs than a 6'4" 220 athlete. So talking specific gram numbers of intake can be a little difficult in generalizations. Some like percentages or some don't like percentages, but going below 25% or 20% in carbohydrates in general With training, I'm not really a fan of, for the most part, unless you have a specific goal. So if you're doing that, I question why. I question what exactly your goals are and how much you're working with someone who really knows what they're doing, or working with someone who has your best long-term interests at heart. I'm not saying that people that prescribe carb plans that are lower than that are doing something wrong, but I do think that you really need to know what you're doing. You need to implement refeed strategies. Timing strategies need to be a lot more specific. The more that you manipulate carbohydrates or restrict carbohydrates or go low in calories, basically the more you need to know what you're doing, the more you need to have a plan, and the more that you need to really be aware of the effects that it can have on your body, rebound, binge starve, all those kinds of things are going to come into play. So I know that the question was about like lethargic behavior, but I think you need to look at first and foremost why you're diving into any sort of really heavy carb restriction. If you think you're going to atrophy and you need to get as much protein as possible, or that carbs are going to keep you fat, I think that you should re-examine those two things, because it's very rarely the case that any sort of problems with atrophy is going to take place beyond minimal macronutrient needs of protein and training. And eating carbs while in a fat loss or a deficit state is not going to keep you from losing fat.
Well, didn't you see that LeBron James dropped all that?
Oh, God.
Did you see that pop up all over the internet and people were like talking about it again?
And it reminded me very much of like the 50 Cent diet thing that happened, which we talked about many, many episodes ago.
Like 20 years ago.
It was. So I'm not a fan. It's really aggressive carb restriction can be a quick fix, especially in the aspect of like dropping water. And it can also be really good for satiation. High protein, low carb plans can be good for some people in satiation, but you can run into problems with energy and recovery and things like that. And then it's very common. Let's say though, you are on carb restriction based upon what your ideal need is for. Just because you're in a deficit or in a caloric restriction in general, because you're in a deficit, you're trying to lose fat. I get tired in any sort of deficit. Carb levels, that doesn't matter. I could eat all carbs and I still get tired when I don't have. My body is very aware of what I need and what I do not need. So when I go into any sort of deficit or restriction, I can really feel like a loss of 300 calories, almost the same as what 1,000 would be. It doesn't feel very different to me. I just feel depleted. Whenever you're in that, timing, in my opinion, is the most crucial of things. Timing of your training, figuring out what time of day you best perform, and the timing of your nutrition is going to be the most crucial. I hate to give some sort of it depends answer, but it is true. What I will do is elaborate on what those depends are so that you feel like it's not just glossed over. Let's say you are an individual who in normal maintenance life really likes to space out your meals because you have so many calories you have to fit in. In a caloric deficit state, it might make more sense to shorten the amount of meals that you have. Like a bodybuilder, like a big bodybuilder guy who really is trying to like, you know, pack on the muscle and keep a lot of metabolic energy or what have you, he probably has to eat 5 to 6 meals a day to satisfy what it is he's trying to do, because he's very specifically targeting physique building routine and maintaining that certain kind of lifestyle. It is hard for a guy like that to eat 2 or 3 meals a day. It's not going to be easy, and those meals a day are going to satisfy his energy. However, if he is in a deficit state or going to restriction, and it's any sort of really more aggressive restriction state, he might do better instead of keeping to that meal routine habit of like breaking it up over mini space meals to providing himself with a little bit larger meals at a time, and therefore he might get a bit of a higher carbohydrate intake at one time, a little bit more of an energy rush, and a little bit more of a satiation and satisfying experience with like his meals, energies, and recoveries at one time. And does not mean that smaller meals at one time do not provide you with just as much energy as shorter meals do, or less frequent meals, but they're can be kind of different insulin effects or different satiation effects that can take place from different sized meals. Bigger meals, generally speaking, can kind of be overall more satisfying than smaller meals broken throughout the day. So these are kind of things that you can look at. You might get more energy from somewhat stockpiling, not to the point, of course, of overeating, and then that's going to make you feel more lethargic, and it can. So timing and the amount of food that you eat at one time can be very crucial, figuring that kind of stuff out. Timing your food with your training. If you know that you really want to focus your energies on training, but you don't have a lot of food in the day, if you train towards the evening, there's nothing wrong with eating very minimal and kind of just your bare minimum of what you need early on in the day and stockpiling it more towards around your training sessions. You know, eat mostly before and after your workout, and you can have all your recovery and energy when you really need it versus getting into some sort of robotic idea of, I must eat here. These are the times I need to eat, and being very going just by like a robotic format instead of going with what you feel or what you need to have happen. Some people are so obsessed right now with like, oh, I must eat breakfast. Other people are like, oh, I can fast at breakfast. It's not about either one of those things. It's what really works for your system. If you train when you get off work, and your work is generally sitting in an office all day, you really don't need a lot for that. Maybe, just a little bit of nutrition or quote unquote snacking, and snacking can be on protein and fats and small carbohydrate, you know, items. It doesn't have to be like snacking, what we classically think of as snacking, but you can like snack a little bit and nibble at work throughout the day, have your coffees and you can kind of get like little caffeine energy kicks from there if you want to. And then you can save a lot more of your eating to pre-workout nutrition and then have like a nice meal afterwards. It's really just about timing these things and, not being afraid to actually use sugar surges or energy surges when you need them. We're so hardcore right now into thinking that every single item that goes into you must be purely packed with every bit of possible nutrient that it can get. And I'm not saying that not eating good food and having like a lot of nutrients in your food is like bad. But if you are having like a hard time with energy in a deficit, getting a little bit of a sugar rush shock, I know, but it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. And having a little bit of simple carbohydrates timed around your training session, and it doesn't have to be crazy, but having a little bit of simple carbohydrates around your training session isn't the worst thing in the world. It can give you a little energy boost. We're really good at breaking it down. We're really good at utilizing it when we need. And it just is something that can help when we're in a lethargic state. Other than that, making sure everything else is on point, not even kidding, sleep. Sleep as much as you can, sleep when you can, and really stay rested. Baths and relaxation, meditation sessions, all that kind of stuff. You get more likely to be drained in an emotional sense, serotonin drops, depression kicks in easier, all those kind of side effects that happen from a deficit are worse. So baby yourself in all other categories. And you do that, and a deficit and carb restriction doesn't have to be so bad. Yeah, it doesn't have to be so aggressive.
My sleep has been better, but I was up late. I got one of those tablets, and I was watching MacGyver season 2 on my tablet, and that's just like, you just shouldn't do that. You'll stay up all night watching MacGyver.
Do you know what Netflix is probably doing to America's insomnia rates, or just people that have access to that kind of thing in general? I don't mean to put it just towards the United States, but like, I know for a fact that I would sleep more on certain occasions if not for Netflix binging.
Like, yeah, I need to see Netflix, like, The Walking Dead or something like that.
It really is. Like, Netflix binging is no joke. It is a complete ruiner of responsibility and doing what you need to do, especially for sleep. And I'm not going to deny that I am a part of it. I am a victim of Netflix binging. I need a support group, and it happens to me.
Yeah, did it twice this week. One was Walking Dead season 4, and I stayed up to 1 a.m. because I needed to see that, because there's like, oh, there's only 2 episodes left. It's like 11:15. I can like fast forward through the boring stuff with the characters I don't like.
I don't even want to talk about when I was watching Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I stayed away from that.
I don't think that there was probably 3 different nights that I said to myself, oh, I'm going to go to bed at this time, or you know, I'm going to stop at like one episode. And it was like seven episodes in. Like, okay, I'm gonna shut it off now. I swear. Yeah, Netflix binging, it is no joke.
It's so easy to stimulate your mind and not have to when you're
really
not moving.
Is.
You're just laying there.
Why not?
If you get tired, just pop open a Diet Mountain Dew. Right? Never mind.
Energy boost.
And, yeah. So let's go on to another question. Maybe we should have started with this. If I was thinking about a good trajectory for the outline, but anyways, Lorden asked. I was wondering how Lee sets up and helps to set up short, medium, and long term goals for different clients.
Great question. Obviously, it is going to depend on what your client's goals are, is the timeline of how you set up your goals. Let's say I have a client whose goal is to lose, they're obese, their goal is to lose body fat and to get down to a much lower body fat level than it is that they carry at this time. So we'll just, for number's sake, say there's a client who is like 35% body fat. Overall, they probably need to lose somewhere in the vein of, for their goals at this time, they want to lose 50 to 60 pounds of like fat, whatever. That's something that they want to do. If this is something that an individual wants to do, you really have to map out the spectrum of their short-term and long-term goals very carefully, because there is one goal at hand, at least in a kind of first stage of things, and you have to set up refeeds, you have to set up time off, you have to set up periods that are based around their training. You really have to look at the overall picture. I like to go even further and not just look at, say, okay, this person wants to lose fat, but what comes after? Are they an athletic kind of person in which that they really like training for training's sake, or are they someone who uses training for health benefits and they're really not an exerciser per se? They just want to do enough of what they want to do in order to get by, because believe it or not, which a lot of people listening to this podcast probably, it's probably not speaking to this audience as much, but there are a lot of people who don't like training. There are a lot of people that don't like exercise, but that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of people that we as personal trainers work with or talk to that don't want to be in better shape or to lose fat. So it really is going to depend on what kind of individual you're talking to. If you're dealing with an individual that doesn't even really like the sweat very much, this is the difference between Kevin generally works with athletes or kids who, are very active, want to be in that kind of community. They are probably going to like training and they're going to want to work towards training. And it's probably going to be something that encompasses like their entire life. Someone who works at maybe just a general pop gym, or that is a trainer for that kind of place, are going to be dealing with more varied personalities and varied interest in training. It could range from those who really hate it to those who start to love it and form a really close relationship with it that never had it before. So you're really dealing with different types of people in that kind of genre. And you might find people that move into a more bodybuilding type things, or people that just like to go for a run every day in the morning, and it doesn't really get more complicated than that. So look at who you're dealing with and what their general goals are, especially in regards to how much they like training. The more someone likes training specifically, I really love to look at their overall plan. If I meet with an individual who maybe they just want to lose a little body fat, but they have goals of it's a female who really wants to get strong at body weight workouts or things they can do with body weight. It's one of my favorite type of programs to design for, because I love women in particular who are told, oh no, you can't do pull-ups, or you can't have like body weight strength, or certain things are completely outside of your realm of the possibility or capability, to say, no, you can get there. It takes intelligence and it takes time and it takes understanding things, but you can totally get there. And I love mapping out timelines for that, stages in which that you're going to work on specific lagging body parts or strength lags, progressives, and just an overall like periodization look at things. I love looking at that, how you do it. I mean, it really does take looking at the client, where are they at with their strengths? Where do you need to pick up weaknesses? Are they having problems with, you know, firing in their chest? Well, it's going to affect how well they can do, like a lot of endurance push-ups. And then with working with that, you know, does release need to happen? Is there tightness? Do they know how to fire? Do you need to, you know, regress in certain training things and work with, you know, bands first, or single arm movements, or you know, bilateral training, things like that? How is it that you need to go about this particular individual? That's where the assessments come in. This is not about being a physical therapist and starting to diagnose problems or postural deficiencies and things like that. I'm not talking about that, but you can work with your client and see that, oh, well, when they're doing a push-up, they're feeling all of that resistance and all of their DOMs are going to the armpits. And if that's happening, you know, there's a problem with how they fire in the midline of their chest, and you can work on that. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with working on lagging body parts and figuring out how to work that into your training. And there's nothing wrong with isolated specialization routines in which that you take a week or two to work on something that is particularly lagging and focus on that. And that is the difference, in my opinion, between generic programming and really why you hire a trainer. Why you hire somebody to map out something for you. If someone hires me, that's the whole point. I map out what we're going to do short term, long term, and the overall goal. And I think it's just really, what do they want? What are they capable of? Not being afraid to kind of buck against the crowd a little bit. If we're taught a lot, for example, all anyone ever needs is, you know, a squat, a deadlift, and a bench press. And I don't think it's that simple. I'm not saying that these aren't important movements, and I'm not saying that that there isn't a truth to that on a certain level, but I don't think that it's that simple. I think that there is a lot of room for individuals' understanding of how to fire muscles and how to communicate from their brain to their action, and I think that we have to be willing to adjust rather than just be like, hey, you know what? Get on the squat rack or get out, or everything needs to be bands or cable training only because large compound movements are completely useless. I don't think it has to be that black and white no matter what field you're in. So being open to all areas of training, how multiple things are and how that can apply to that individual client, I think it's very important. And getting outside of your ego, getting around yourself, I think all these things are really important. And that's a general overview of how I look at mapping out things. And I look at nutritional strategies. I look at goals, what they want. And I just try and timeline it the best I can and hit things and readjust. I usually don't map out more than 4 to 6 weeks at a time. It's very rare that I will, like, I'll have an overall kind of big goal, but it's very rare. Like, each individual assessment, it's taken very frequently, like very frequently. And there's been some times that it's a weekend. Like, we are a week in into what it is we're doing, and I'll realize, you know what, this isn't right. We need to make some adjustments here, and boom, and go back into the drawing board. And I would do that with online work or in-person work, and you need to be able to do that. I'm not, when I do clients, and I am not someone that just, okay, here's your 4-week program, just do this. We're not going to make any changes. Talk to me in 4 weeks. I don't see the point in that. I mean, I see it in the sense of, like, you just want something short term for a short term simple assessment. I get that. But if we're having back and forth communication, you're reporting into me, I'm like watching your progress. If you're saying, like, yeah, you know, I'm having a hard time with this, like, this isn't, like, I'm not really doing this right, I'm going to say to you, okay, like, we need to reassess things and you need to try these things, report back to me, we make adjustments and then move on. I think that kind of pliability is very important. So yeah, it's a general rambly look at it, but I think that that explains things.
Man, you're fired up to be back.
I am.
It's good.
Yeah.
Sometimes so. We need to take a vacation, you know?
We do.
Seriously. Awesome. All right. So let's keep going down the list. And yeah, like I said, I probably should have done a better job organizing this stuff together. But we got a lot of questions like the last minute for what people wanted to talk about. So let's kind of like stay on the goal setting track for a little bit. We got a couple questions that were in this category, but just, you know, what do you do in terms of course correction? Like what do you recommend to clients that have reverted back to their bad habits, whether it be like nutritional or training? And like, what do you kind of do, or like, what do you recommend to people that just need to get back on track?
Sure. I usually find that the people who revert the worst or who fall off the wagon the worst were usually the people that were trying to do something that really went against their authentic self during a deficit or restriction. People who have a generally very on and off mentality. I'm on, so I'm going to eat the most healthiest stuff in the world. I am going to broccoli and chicken breast it all day long. And I am not going to have any simple carbohydrates. And people that every bit of nutrition that enters into my mouth will be the highest of vitamin levels. And I will not fall way to something as disgusting as bread. These are the people that I find that fall off the wagon the worst, that get into binge behavior, that are very bad with their off season if they're competitors, that end up having these like depression episodes where they'll have weeks off of what it is they're doing, put on like 5 pounds of like real fat because they've been eating like 1,000 to 2,000 calories over day after day. People that have really restrictive all or nothing kind of behavior to their diet and training in general. They only train when they're in a deficit. You know, they only train when they're trying to achieve fat loss. They don't train to just keep up with their health and well-being in general or with their physical strength. I find that is seriously like 9 times out of 10, someone who like falls off like bad, or, have a very like restrictive nature to them. I will say the other subset is generally someone who they're having just issues with themselves and with happiness in life. And I don't want to get too like armchair psychology, but people that are using food as comfort or as some sort of satisfying for a lack of something that is existing in their life. And it is just an area where they put an obsessive focus or an addictive focus. And that is a different kind of an animal. And I'm not saying that we can elaborate on that, but I think for them, for someone who is dealing with something like that, you really need to get in touch with, and it can, they can cross over platforms, but you really need to get in touch with what's going on with you, what's going on with your emotional state, what's going on with your interpersonal relationships and your authenticity with who you are and what it is you want to be and all those kinds of things. I think that plays a very huge role into how bad things get for someone who is falling off. So it is very assessing. It's very individual. It's a very depends kind of thing, as is everything. And if I have a client or a friend or what have you, who is, they are working towards a mission and a goal and they're having a hard time sticking to it, first, I like to look at how restrictive it is and how realistic it is. I see no reason for your diet to be a lot different in a deficit as it is in normal life. Basically, it's just less with maybe a little bit more of an emphasis on protein. It's really that simple. It just doesn't have to get a lot crazier than that. I'm not saying there are instances where there can't be more dialed in details, but for the most part, it is what you eat at maintenance, just a little less, and maybe a little bit more emphasis on protein to protect it, protect against, like, you know, muscle mass loss or atrophying. So if you are having a lot of pizza and going out to dinner every night at restaurants and drinking a lot of beer, and you go from, which is enjoyment in food. And I'm not talking about binge pizza or binge eating or binge beer drinking. I'm talking, you're just, you're relaxing. You're hanging out with your family. You're drinking some wine. You're doing this, you're whatever. And you're enjoying life. I don't think that you should really enjoy life much less. Let's just say if you have two or three beers, you can only like have one maybe, or you restrict alcohol to just like, you know, kind of fun on the weekends or during like your refeed or break times. If there's not room for it in your calories, you kind of have to make better nutritional calls. If you're not getting a lot of food, there should be more of a focus on getting more nutrition into your body because your recovery is going to be less. You need more help, but it doesn't mean that it has to be all or nothing. If you still want to have a day where you kind of eat like crap, fine, but just make sure it doesn't go crazy over in your caloric needs. It's just changing your attitude about it. I find the people that are most long-term successful have discovered and have just said to themselves, look, this like crazy restriction, eating things I don't like to eat, treating myself as if that I'm a part of some sort of crazy Biggest Loser transformation and doing it as fast as I can. It doesn't work. Like, let it go. Let it go. You're not going to do it. It doesn't work for you. You don't have that personality. Get over it and move on. And accept the fact that for you, a moderate pace, moderate approach, just kind of lackadaisical attitude towards fat loss and body composition is probably going to get you there so much faster than your continual need to create this magical transformation in your mind. Let it go. Just give it up. Just let it go and just try and have a really relaxed nature at it. And I find that you do that and you relay that kind of thing, by the way, to your clients, or you relay that kind of attitude to them, that, things move a lot better rather than sitting down with your client and being like, hey, look, that bread right there does nothing for you. And that pasta you're putting in your mouth, it's crap. You get no nutrients from that. That right there, what you're eating, it's going to give you skin disorders. It's going to destroy your digestive system. And you're just going to keep storing fat instead of losing it.
What are we, really? Dr. Oz? What are we doing?
I mean, like, seriously, like, do you know what you're talking about? Stop saying that stuff to your clients if you are. If you are saying that stuff, you need to learn something.
The fear-mongering like, stuff. Like,
yes, that stuff. Fear-mongering behavior or that all-or-nothing mentality, you're poisoning your clients' minds. You're creating disordered behavior, and you're telling them that living their normal life is going to be over for them. Mm-hmm. That's it. They have no more just general normal behavior. They're not going to be able to go out with their friends. Like, I'm sorry. It is enjoyable to go out with friends and family and, you know, dip chips into salsa and drink some alcohol and dance and have fun. What's the point of living and like having a life if you're just going to be like, oh, I'm sorry. Like that has like, I think wheat's in there. And I've read that it reduces my digestive system to mere a minimum of what it could be, and it hurts my gut flora. I'm not eating that crap. Like, get it away from me. Like, oh, you're gonna have a fun life then. And it also makes it harder for the people that actually have problems with that to have conversations with their friends and family, because they look at them as like neurotic people who just, you know, want to like lose weight, and they don't take them seriously, and it creates a stigma for those people that actually have a problem. It's just bad all the way around. It's bad marketing. It's bad psychology, and it's just bad. So stop going. You know that kind of classic scene that we see on all these TV shows where the trainer or the nutritionist goes into the cabinets and they start throwing everything away that they have. See this? This has artificial chemicals in it, and these chemicals are going to make you store fat and feel lethargic and cause depression. You can't even like have sex anymore because you eat these Doritos. Throw it out. This is horrible. Oh my God, get over yourself. Like, that's not the case. That's not what it is anyway. And you're just telling these people that any sort of enjoyment they can get from food is something they should feel guilty about or is wrong. Yeah, that's really setting up your client for like future success. Like, stop doing that. You may not realize what it's doing, and you may not relate to it, because for you, you really would rather have like a yogurt and some almonds instead of you know, a Nutrigrain bar or something like that, or even potato chips. But there are people that genuinely just don't like the taste or textures of things. They didn't grow up with it. It wasn't something that was involved in their family. I hate to get all like white people silver spooned, but there are a lot of where I grew up, you did not. Vegetables weren't something that were on a plate. Maybe some mashy like canned peas, but it's not. There's a lot of way of eating that is not comfortable or emotionally satisfying. And if you can't relate to to your clients on some basic level that they don't have to go all or nothing with their behavior and mentality, they're never going to get there. You've got to be realistic about what's happening. So really help them understand the moderation of what it is they need for their goals that they achieve. And I find the falling off the wagon, air quote, is a lot. It doesn't happen as much. And I can relay this, by the way, from personal experience, that I've never had healthier issues with food. I don't even think about food anymore, really. I didn't even realize how much I did. And this has been, you know, a few years now that I felt like this, but there was a very particular time when I got really deep into the industry that I thought about food all the time. I didn't even realize it. I thought about what I was going to eat, the level of what I ate, the time that I ate. I really had kind of, not, I wouldn't say disordered in the sense of I had a really bad, like issue or eating disorder on a level that was really obvious, but it certainly was this kind of like subconscious guilt and need to like please a they that existed on some sort of level. And when I let all that go and just was kind of like, screw it, like, I don't care. I'm just going to do what I need to do and enjoy myself. My body comp had never been better and my health have never been better. And the past like 2 years, really, I've come into my nutritional own, I feel, on levels that I didn't even realize were kind of damaged, like hindsight 2020. So just really like have a very moderate behavior and stop with a lot of that kind of classic training that we're taught or that we see to do. And I think that that'll help your clients. And if you're one of the clients, then kind of take on what I said from that and use it for yourself.
Everyone listening to this, like, take, pause, rewind like 8 minutes and listen to that again, because I'm dead serious, because that is one of the things that I, you know, struggled with for a long time. And like, Lee knows me really well, and like how, you know, and I think that's like a lot of us that like either really get into the fitness stuff, but like mentally we're kind of messed up when we think about this stuff. Yeah. Like, man, did I get like 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight today? Wait, no, is that lean body mass, or is that supposed to be total body weight? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? Is this a high carb day? Is it a low carb day? Like,
I don't do stuff like that anymore.
Well, that's when I still like run into issues like in terms of like nutrition and stuff like that. It is exactly what you said. We're like, yeah, man, I'm going to go like 4 days, went to Whole Foods. I spent too much money on food, and I got the most like organic, healthy stuff that I can get. Where, you know, most of the time, I guess maybe what we should be thinking about more is just getting in good food, and like even like not even just to have that organic versus like non-organic debate, but you know, just get in good, healthy food.
Yeah, just whole food.
Don't eat a lot.
Yeah.
Move.
Don't, I mean, really, it is that simple. And I think I don't think about what time I'm going to eat anymore. I don't think about timing my training nutrition that much. I mean, I do in a sense of like, I'm planning out my day. I'm going to the gym here. I need to eat before I go. But I'm not like, okay, I'm going to get in 200 grams of protein here. I'm going to get in like 100 grams of carbs here. I'm going to do this. Like, I don't think like that anymore. I will have these days that I kind of stock up on a high nutrition. I do it without really thinking about it, though. Like, I have days where I don't eat low carb, but I will eat very high fibrous carb and high protein and kind of like bulk up, if you will, on a lot of protein and like kind of nutrients. And then I'll have some days where I'm like, I'm chips and saucing it. I am, you know, just kind of just going through and just living life. And I am very low in body fat right now. I am, you know, feeling pretty decent. I don't think about food. I'm certainly don't feel like I am restrictive or not getting, I eat chocolate all the time. I mean, I still have my own like allergy issues that like makes me hate life because God, I miss cheese. But other than that, like, I don't really have like any sort of like aggressive restrictions or things that I have to deal with. And that's a really just health-based thing. It's not a psychological thing. So I just don't think about it anymore, and I don't care. I just don't care anymore. And I'm not like mad that I cared. And I think for some people it is important because of like their personality and the way that they work. But there is this part of me that's kind of like, oh, that was really stupid. And I feel kind of dumb And I feel a little gullible, and I don't feel gullible. Gullible isn't something that happens to me. It really isn't. Like, I'm not a person that feels gullible. I'm not a person that kind of buys into things. I really am skeptical in general. But I kind of subconsciously bought into this need to feel like, I don't know if belong is right, but that I fit into the industry in this right way, the way that I needed to. And I don't care. I don't care anymore at all. I don't care if, you know, some sort of fitness competitor thinks that I have the body, the muscle mass level that I need to have. And if they think that my carbohydrate intake is like, appropriate, I don't care. Like, what do I care? I don't care. I never really cared. I just thought, oh, I'm not going to be like qualified, right? Like that I have to be qualified and I have to eat a lot of protein in order to do this job right. What the hell was I thinking? I don't get it, because it wasn't good for my body. My body was not liking it at all. And it was not happy on any sort of level. And it's going to be different for different people. It may be the reverse for somebody else. So I'm not like knocking like a lot of protein intake. It could be, you know, you are living way too much off of like fruit or something like that, and just go have yourself some rice or something and a lot more chicken breasts. I don't care. But I just don't care anymore. I don't care what my meal defines me as like a trainer or as like a person. I'm just enjoying it. And I've been like that for a while, but I didn't realize kind of hindsight how much it really did kind of mess with my head. It really did mess with me a little bit. And I didn't realize that until just how easy I realized it was. Like, it was the not being bothered that made me realize how much I was actually bothered, if that makes sense. And I was like, oh, I was actually kind of really bothered by that. I didn't even realize it. So anyway, let it go. Just let it go. And learn your basics. Know what's important. Yes. Make effort. Don't just be like, screw life, I'm going to eat Pringles every day and like powdered donuts. But there is a really big line between. And yeah, I'm a happier person for it. And I find time and time again that other people are as well. So, yeah.
I think that's a good place to stop. What we're going to do is we booked some overtime. So, we're going to record two episodes today. So don't worry. We're going to have more Lee Peel coming on, you know, since it's her favorite band and all, episode 311, they're going to be some Amber. We're going to have,
down.
Yeah. What the hell happened to those guys? But, don't forget.
Oh, they covered Love Song. And someone somewhere sent them into a chamber to never come out.
Good.
Because they shouldn't have covered Love Song. It shouldn't have happened.
I want to give people a heads up that, of course, if you want to check out Lee's stuff, you can grab the latest book, I guess would be Starve Mode. The latest package of information is Starve Mode at starvemode.com. And it's $39. It's the best package of stuff that I've ever, you know, been able to listen to. Well, that's the good thing, is that you can actually like,
you get a book or audiobook, you get both.
Totally. Yes. And if you like podcasts, yeah, totally. If you like podcasts, just put it in right after this, and then you can get 9 extra hours of Lee Peel.
You can. That's very true.
So make it a 10-hour podcast.
That was really fun to record. It's really fun.
I remember it's been a while since I listened to it, but I kind of want to like listen to it again, because you brought up like a lot of those same topics today. You go in more depth in the book.
Definitely
check that out. And like I said, I'm not going to do it on affiliate link. I just want you to go to starvemode.com. It's like I said, $39. And since it's $39, why don't you kick a dollar to the FitCast Patreon?
Oh, look at that. Patreon.com/thefitcast. Good plug. I think that's a really cool idea. Like when I start doing my podcast, I'm not even going to lie, I'm totally stealing your idea when I start doing my podcast again. Because I don't think people realize how like, I know it's like we're hitting record and you think, well, how hard is it? But like it's not easy to do this.
Well, it's like, and it's just for us when we're like scheduling, like going back and forth with emails, like scheduling stuff, getting questions from Facebook, sending out emails, putting together the podcast, editing it, editing the RSS feed, uploading it, paying for the website.
It takes some time. And not to mention, it's not easy. You're putting yourself out there. It's not easy. Support is good. Support's good. Yes. It's good to have support. It really is. It's good to see like, Kevin doing this, I get nothing from this. I don't get any of the Patreon money. I want to make that very clear. I don't get an ounce of it, and it's fine. I'm going to sue him eventually to
Lee
try and get
done. Never made a dollar
I've
from
never
ever
made
coming
a,
on the show.
No, never. I've never made anything from coming on here. But like, it really, like, so it's, for Kevin having support, I just, it's really good to, for like to say, you know what you do, Kevin, it keeps me company during a commute, or it's helped me with something or in my life to get, whatever. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's a way of saying like, fine, dude, here's a buck. And it adds up, and it makes him feel like that he's not just doing this to a quiet crowd of people. Which I that's the thing about podcasting. It's not the same as like talking on Facebook or putting out a blog post. Like you never get feedback. Like you might get an email like, hey, I heard this podcast, but it's not like this direct, I put something out and a direct like response. It might be weeks later you hear about something or whatnot, and it can be a little, occasionally it can feel a little lackluster, I think. And showing him that support, I think, would be very good. So that's my plug for supporting the show.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, right now we have, I think we have 61 people supporting the show through Patreon. Like I said, I know there's a lot of you out there. It's really tough, like learning to, you know, try to, you know, ask people to pay for something that they've gotten for free for 8 years. You know, psychologically, it is a big hurdle, and I totally understand. Like if you aren't, I want to make sure this information is always free. People keep sending me emails like, why don't you do like 20 minutes of paid content, like after you
stop. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Well, Eddie, it blocks off the people that, you know, cannot afford it.
Yeah.
I don't, like, why?
That's why I think it's a really good idea. Information? It's like the people that, it's like PBS.
Totally.
I love it. You know what I mean? It's like, for those who want to contribute and, like, be a part of it, they're like, you know, and you get, like, something for it. Like, what, you get, like, producer credit or something? No, isn't it kind of like Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something like that?
You get featured on the Patreon website, and, like, I can actually see who's, like, supporting the show, and you can put, like, a profile up there and stuff like that. And also, like, one of the rewards that I'm putting together is that if we do hit, I think it's, like, $300 per episode. So I think it's not that far off. I think we're at, like, $240-something dollars per episode. When it gets to 300, I'm going to release 19 interviews that were part of that FitCast Insider package for everyone for free.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, it's literally like almost 20 hours of extra audio that I'll just be able to throw up there for free. But, you know, again, it's one of those things where I only want people supporting the show if, you know, you're financially capable of doing it. And that's why with Patreon, like hopefully most people can afford like $4 per week and you find it worthy of your dollar. And I want to try to strive each and every episode to make sure it is. And if at any case you find that the show is not worth supporting, you cancel it.
Excellent.
All right. So check out leepeel.com, starvemode.com. Obviously support the show on iTunes. If you're on there, you can submit a review and make sure that we're staying atop the other crazy people that are spouting, you know, terrible information just because they have a face on television or whatnot. And of course, you can go to that patreon.com/theFitCast site to support, or go through PayPal at thefitcast.com on that left-hand side. And stick around. We're going to be doing some off-topic discussion for people that like the old-school FitCast episode. So hang around for that, and we'll be back next week with even more. Okay, believe it or not, we're here for some off-topic discussion with myself and the lovely Lee Peel. Lee, what's up?
I am the lovely. I'm so lovely. Just loveliness. I love you. The people listening don't know what you just called the off-topic, but I really do love what you just called it.
Oh, talking about just some random S, some random stuff?
Exactly. The way that you said it in 3, 2, 1. Oh, and it really sounded like an early like PBS TV show, like 3, 2, 1, contact. Did you ever watch?
Hell yeah, I did.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, it's that's what it reminded me of when he said it.
Well, there was awesome, like, what's the synth beats and stuff? Like,
yeah. Oh my god, like how good was it? Like way before Postal Service. Yeah, they like had it right.
Man, I can't. The last time I listened to Postal Service, I was in college. I think because they got a little big for me when they were on the Garden State soundtrack.
No, I totally get it. I listened to Clark Gable the other day, And I was like, man, I forgot how much I love this song. And so I've been listening to it, just that song, but I've been listening to it randomly.
What have you been listening to for music? What new? I bought CDs recently. Holy, like, if you can believe it.
You know what's funny? I bought CDs recently too, but a lot of the ones I bought were because they were like pre-orders or you can get access to tickets or something like that if you do it. What have I been listening to? I am really into Ben Howard right now. It's so good, just lull music, like sit and do work or sit and just like kind of chill. Like, I've really been loving Ben Howard. There is a band called the Kite String Tangle. They've released an EP that's really, you would probably like that. That's really good. Elliot Sumner, I've been listening to, which is like Sting's daughter. Yes, it's really good. It's an EP that was released. I'm like going through my phone and like seeing like what I've been listening to. But I've been listening to everything. Me and music are on a really good, our relationship is really good right now. I've been listening to a lot of classic stuff too. Like, I've been on a big Van Morrison kick. So I don't know, just a lot of stuff. The War on Drugs. I really like The War on Drugs right now too. So yeah.
All right, I'm gonna have to make some notes here. I have this thing where I'll like listen to music like really hardcore for a couple weeks, and I'll go back to podcasts or go back to books or whatever. But if you like Two Door Cinema Club, which I guess they've kind of blown up in the last couple of years, but I've listened to their Tourist History. I think was their first like big album. I played the crap out of that like 3 years ago, and they had a new one come out called Beacons. But there's this other band that's like Northern England. I guess they would be from the northern part of England called Bombay Bicycle Club.
Oh yeah, I've heard of them.
Holy crap, they're real good.
Yes,
I would highly recommend checking them out. And Tycho is another like ambient.
Nice. Yes, that is really good chill music.
Totally.
It's very good chill music. It's very good to just, I do like stretching to that, or like kind of just, we'll do some like reading or work to that. I love that.
Well, for me, I'm having like, I have problems. The reason why I have like ups and downs is like, I'll just, like Pandora's not recommending me music that I really want to listen to. Like, I can't find a service that is really trying to give me similar music. Even Spotify seems to be doing a better job of that for me, but I go on these crazy kicks where I'm like, man, I can't buy this on iTunes. Like 256, you know, kilobytes per second. It's not high enough quality for me.
It's not. No, I know. And I'm the same way. And you know what I've been doing? I make these mixes. I was just talking about this. I make these mixes every month, and they're FMK mixes. Which is relevant to the topic of Pitcast, because, you know, sure. I'm still not going to tell like you and John who I picked, but they're FMK mixes. And every month I will I'll go to like Stereo Gum, I'll go to Hype, I'll just go to all these like kind of random places. I'll look on iTunes and I'll just kind of like start scanning like some bands or things or whatnot that'll kind of pop up. Or I've been finding a lot of really good music and indie movie trailers lately. And there's this one song that I found. It's a band called I think it's Aquilo. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's Aquilo. I think you'd really love it. It was in a trailer for a Kristen Stewart movie. I don't know. The movie looks fine enough, but the song is insane. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. And I downloaded it, and now I am all over their stuff. But I'll just make a mix every month, and I'll put like everything on there, and then I'll make my own little like Pandora selection playlist. And I have been really, I think that's why I'm back on with music. I mean, not that I'm ever off with music, but I'm back on with finding a lot of music lately. Like, so much that I don't know what to do with kind of finding music.
Well, that's good. Like, it's like I do the same thing with whenever I buy like games or anything, I like stock up. Like, I just go hardcore for like two or three nights to scour, you know, wherever to, and I just buy a bunch of stuff. And Amazon has this thing called auto rip, where like you can buy a lot of their CDs, you can just buy it and they'll automatically throw the digital version in their Amazon music player thing. So you can always listen to it on your phone and stuff like that. So they have these like great deals where they'll just throw in like a bunch of CDs for like $5, like $4.99, where I bought like six Michael Jackson CDs and like Green Day CDs and Gorillaz and stuff like that.
Nice.
And it will just like, so you can have that CD if you want that. If you want to rip it in a higher quality, you can always do that. But just for the road and for the car and stuff like that, you can have their know, 256, you know, K version, which most people won't be able to tell the difference. And to be honest,
oh God, I can.
Well, I probably can't, but I just feel like I don't like, why am I, you know, settling for lesser quality when I'm like the guy that needs to have the $3,000 Apple?
No, I am not surprised. I mean, there are some things you can't, like, I find the more organic the music, like if it's just like a guy with an acoustic guitar and really good vocals, 128 to on down the line, it's kind of hard to, the more layers there are, the more instrumentation, the more like an orchestra is thrown in or things like that. You, in my opinion, I can really hear the tinying of like of bass and of like the details of instruments and things like that. It really starts to, it starts to come out, and I can, I pretty much cannot listen to anything that's below 320 for most things that are very band orientated. When it comes to like solo artists or really just a few tracks in the production, the less tracks, the lower quality I can listen to at a lower quality. But yeah,
now, that makes sense, and that's why I buy, you know, if it's a, like for the Bombay Bicycle Club, like I listen to their songs, and I literally, and it was stupid, but I bought the thing digitally because I think it was digitally, it was like $5 for the album. Then I spent like another $10 to just get the CD, so I can rip it and get the higher quality, because I am way past the college days of downloading music illegally. Like, I have, if I want to listen to something, if it's worth listening to, I'll give them, like, CDs are $10. Like, they're not, very few CDs are in like the $15 range anymore. And a lot of times, like, I've been picking up like weird stuff. Like, there's this series, if you're into games and you like music, there's a series called Digging in the Carts. That I interviewed the guy that's doing the documentary for on my other podcast. But, it's like interviewing artists today that were influenced by Japanese video game music of the 80s and early 90s. And
ooh,
how
that sounds interesting.
Oh, it's so fantastic.
Is it neat? That sounds interesting.
The Red Bull Music Academy is launching in Japan. They're launching like their Japan wing of it. So they put together this, these two guys, Nick and Two, to put together this documentary, which is like an hour and a half long, broken up into six parts. But yeah, just search for Digging in the Carts, like Digging, like D-I-G-G-I-N in the Carts on the internet, and it's all free. You can just watch them on Red Bull's website. But yeah, that's real good. All right, so I got more music to download, and I got this 64 gigabyte iPhone.
Oh,
that has so much room. Like, what did people do with it?
Did you get the six?
Yeah, well, I ended up, I'm gonna be in Japan for,
does it bend?
No, it doesn't bend. But the this is a pro tip for people that do travel. I was on Verizon, but T-Mobile offers free data roaming, unlimited free data roaming in their plans internationally. So, dead serious. Like, and I even looked it up. Like, I did some research. I called them. I looked at like travel, was it like travel websites and stuff like that to see if it was legit. And to stick with, like, automatically I'm paying like 40% less per month for the same thing I was getting on Verizon. Plus, you know, I'm not going to have to spend the, I think it's like $20 for 200 megabytes or something like that on Verizon's international data plan. So for me, I just literally switched so I can use maps and, you know, the internet while I'm in Japan, because I'm going to be there for like 2 months. So I need to make sure I can get around and stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I just got a phone, like a local phone. I just went and did one of those. I don't remember. It's like, it's called Focaphone or something like that. Vodafone? I don't remember. Yeah, I couldn't remember what it's called. I just got one of those, and I got, like, you know, a local phone, local data plan, paid like $25 or something like that.
That's the thing. Japan doesn't let you do it. You have to have a Japanese residence to get a cell phone, and the ones that you can rent.
Really? Like,
yeah, the only thing that you can rent there is a pocket Wi-Fi, or you can get, like, they don't sell burner phones. Like, you can't get a prepaid cell phone or anything like that there. You have to have a Japanese residence to be able to sign up for cell phone service, which is, you know, another way that they tell people that, yeah, you know, we're not really fond of foreigners coming into our country and stuff. So, that's awesome.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah, so pro tip, if you're going to
do a lot of
international travel, like, T-Mobile, for me, like, I found it to be pretty damn good service, and I live kind of in the middle of nowhere, so worth a look if you need a new iPhone. But yeah, seriously, what do you do with 64 gigabytes on your phone? Like, what do you put on it? I put on almost all my music, and I still have like 30 gigabytes.
Oh my God,
free.
Nara. Like, I could my music wouldn't even. I have the folders. The amount of folders of music I have on my computer is ridiculous. I think it's like, what last I checked, it was like 260 gigabytes of
Holy
music
shit.
On my computer. Yeah, I mean, it's like, because I download full albums. I have them all organized. Like, I'm rarely. Like, I'm very minimal. Yeah. Like, I'm not dirty in any way, shape, or form. Like, I'm very minimal. I like very little things. I don't like clutter. But I'm not really OC. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not like that. Like, I'm not like, oh, I need every... Like, I notice when something's out of place, but I'm not like, oh, like, I have to, like, that has to be in the exact right place or bug me. Like, I can totally go to bed and be like, whatever, do that later. Like, mm-hmm. not a problem. But, like, my music is OC.
Totally.
Like, it's, like, genre'd, it's foldered, it's, like, it's subtitled of, like, albums, everything.
Wait, so what's your hierarchy? Like, how do you, like, okay, you have your music folder. What's in that folder?
Well, like, okay, I have, like, for, like, a download section, I have a folder called, like, incoming, in which that things are to be sorted into their, like, later folders. So, like, if I'm downloading something, be it, like, iTunes or some other, like, source, be it, like, you, like, I get something, like, off of YouTube that, like, I sample or whatever, like, it'll download into an incoming thing, and, like, I'll listen to that, realize if I want to keep it or not, and it deserves to be sorted into the keep folders. The keep folders are, like... it's classified or separated into, like, I have, like, hip hop sections, indie sections, trip hop, like, dance, like, it's like genre. It's like broken down to them, like, different genres. So, like, solo artists, etc. And then they all go into that by the name of the artist or band, and then subtitled into, like, the albums. And so I have, like, folder after folder after folder, and it is massive. It is very massive, and it is very organized, and it's backed up. And I literally, when, like, I back up my computer, I have one hard, like, external hard drive that does just my music, and then everything else, like, goes on another, so that if I have a problem, I can just reload it back up. Yeah. That's Jeez. The only area that I'm a little specifically, like, crazy organized, because everything else I'm kind of very lackadaisical and laid back, but that I'm a little OC about.
Okay. Well, I think, we're going to keep talking unless we start recording other stuff. So, what we're doing, we might be recording two episodes, back to back. So maybe we'll come back and we'll do, like, some more movie and TV.
Yeah. Cause that was like music. So now we can do, like, movie TV. I just watched Scorpion, which seriously, I think you'd like. It's nerdy and fun and stupid.
You know what?
I think you would like it. I do.
You know why I would like it? Because it's directed and it's produced by the guy that Justin Lin, who directed Fast and Furious Tokyo.
Oh my
Drift.
God! There you go. It just comes together. I think you would like it. I really liked it.
All right. Well, I need to. We'll come back and we'll talk about that, because I need to stock up on stuff for my 17 hours of travel to Japan. So, yeah. All right, we're gonna record some stuff that you came for. All right.